John Curtis, and you're listening to the Beat 2 Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lappin and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by former Leeds and Carlisle midfielder Andy Cousins. How are you doing this evening, Andy?
I'm alright, mate. How are you?
I'm very well. So firstly, how did you get into the game?
I got into the game when I was, basically 14. Yeah. Like the good old days of, you getting into the football with your schoolboy forms and playing for... Leeds City boys, or playing for Bradford boys, or playing for your, for me it was being the juniors and things like that. And you get scouted, and I was fortunate to have a bit of a choice. With really Sheffield United, Bradford, and Leeds. And I chose Leeds. So 14-year-old, I signed, and I was playing schoolboy football, then for 2 years on with them. And I was very fortunate then. Basically, to get offered a contract as an apprentice down there. So it kind of all started really, I suppose, a bit earlier than that. But 14 was the first time I'd signed with Leeds. And it's just a case of knuckling down and going from there. It's a bit different now when you're 6 years old now when you can be signed by a professional club. Personally, I don't agree with, but that's a different matter. But certainly for me, it was 14. I was involved, and you kind of get involved a little bit with the first team and the youth team and the people around that area and stuff. And you just gotta you kind of knuckle down and you learn your trade at a very young age now. So
yeah. So what made you pick Leeds over Bradford and Sheffield United?
For me, it was quite simple, really. I'd always really supported Leeds. I'd always followed Leeds even from a young boy. I can remember going to watch the Liverpool play there, and there was the likes of Sammy Lee and Kenny Dalglish and people like that playing. And, the biggest influence for me was Dick Bate, who now is with the FA, I believe. He came over from the Middle East and doing some stuff over there. And he actually came to my house. And that's the main reason. He planned down what he saw my future was, why he wanted Leeds to be the club which I signed for. And by doing that, for me personally and for my parents and stuff, that's why we mainly chose there. And if Sheffield United, I would have had to have, gone into digs and things. If it was, Bradford City, I live in Bradford, so, it's a local club for me and things, but Leeds was an obvious choice, and they weren't in the Premiership or Championship as it was then.
No.
You could see a little bit of a revolution going on at Leeds. That we brought Vinnie Jones in, and we brought Gordon Strachan in, and Kenny McAllister was in, and all these players who obviously went on to do fantastic jobs down at Leeds United, and they were part of a Howard Wilkinson and Dick Bate kind of, this is what we want, this is how we want to go forward, and the junior side of it was very important for them. And they came and Dick basically he convinced me that it was the right club for me, and he was at the time he was right. Absolutely, I couldn't have asked for a better upbringing really, with Dick being in charge and then Paul Hart being in charge when I was an apprentice. Pete Gumby always being there as well. Pete was part of our youth team. Schoolboy team, which he looked after, and then he was part of our youth team as well on the coaching staff. So, big influences in your life, really, because they're the people who kind of create men out of boys, I suppose.
Was Paul Hart? Did Paul Hart go on to manage Forest? Is it the same person?
Paul Hart. So Paul basically came in on our second year as an apprentice to Paul, and again. He was a guy who took nothing but the best from each player he had, really, and he didn't really look at I don't think we even lost that year under Paul. We went in the youth cup, and we had a lot of players who came through and went into the first team, which is obviously fantastic. It was great that Paul actually went back for me. out for him, but he was a big influence in all our careers of the young lads, really. And you know, if we had any problems, you can go speak to him, and he would tell you the truth. And he did look after you. He looked after you, you know, some of the lads' monies and, you know, ins and outs and where they were living and how they lived and things. It was, you know, he was a good man, was Paul. Very, very good for us.
Yeah, so in 1993, you won the FA Youth Cup against your rivals, Man United, winning 2-1 at Old Trafford. And then, so 2-0 at Lee Ellen Road in front of over 30,000 people at both matches, wasn't it? So it must have been an amazing week in your young career. So.
Yeah, I think in our careers itself, I think, you know, I do a bit of work now down at Leeds, and it's the one thing you get asked all the time, you play that youth thing, which is Man United. You know, and I think it's important to kind of, you know, go through the Man United team to kind of get an understanding of it, and I suppose that's for us works now, you know. They had the both Nevilles played, they had Beckham playing, they had Nicky Butt playing, Paul Scholes playing, Robbie Savage, Dick Gillespie, you know, Chris Casper, the list went on. You know, we beat them quite convincingly over the two legs. Really, we beat them 2-0 down at Old Trafford, and we beat them 2-1 at Ellen Road. We did beat them quite convincingly. But the biggest thing for us was that, you know, there was 30,000 down at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
For a youth game, I think it was one of the first ones on Sky. And then at Ellen Road, we had typical Ellen Road fans, which is the Leeds fans that they won't be beaten, and we had 33,000 at Ellen Road. It was a delayed kickoff. It was 15 minutes delayed and things. It was just unreal, really. You know, and that atmosphere and the lap of honour. We did a lap of honour after we won, and we did a lap of honour with the trophy, and everybody still stayed there. It's obviously very fond memories for us, and we still talk about it now with the players who I played with. We're still good friends. We all still talk. You know, and it's a camaraderie which, you know, winning trophies kind of, I suppose, must bring in, because it was, you know, really the only trophy I won. So it was, it brings a community together, really, and that's certainly what our youth cup team, you know, was. And we had a laugh, but we were serious as well, and we knew at the time we knew how to win football matches. Unfortunately, we just didn't take that into the first team, all of us, as much as we wanted to, like Man United's new team did, really. So that's really disappointing side. You know, a lot of us all made first team appearances, played in the Premier League, played in Europe, you know, played for the England under-21s and so on and so forth. But, you know, we just didn't quite do the same as what the Man United lot done. If we'd done half as good as them, we'd have all had very, very good careers. And possibly now wouldn't have to, you know, work from 8 in the morning till 7 at night every week, every day. But, you know, that's part of it, I suppose.
It must have been amazing to be a midfielder at Leeds at that time, with the likes of Gary McAllister and Gary Speed and David Batty and Gordon Strachan to gain experience from.
It was. And Strachan had a big influence on all of us, did Gordon Strachan. And he's one of the funniest men you'll meet, and even now, if you meet him, he's still exactly the same as what he was back then. And, you know, Strach basically got everybody who was under 21 had to go and train with him in the afternoon. Don't matter if you're playing the first team, doesn't matter if you were, what you were doing, if you're playing for England, anything, you know, you were still in. Or for Gav Kelly, for instance, playing for Ireland at that point, you know, you were still in the afternoon. And, you know, Strach was a big influence. Gary McAllister, for me, was also a big influence. You know, I was Gary Mack's boot boy from my first year, my second year, and I still speak to Gary now, still play golf and things like that. You know, and it's something which you never forget, really. You never forget them, you know, them moments which the older pros did, you know, look after you, you know, massively. And obviously, you know, for me, it was the best midfield which has been in the Premiership, which is, you know, the Gary McAllister, Gary Speed, you know, your Gordon Strachan and your David Batty in there. Again, you can't speak highly enough about the other two. You know, Batty was just unbelievable. He was one of the hardest players I played against. You just couldn't get near him. And then you got Speedo, God rest his soul, you know, who we all, obviously we all still miss now. You know, we, you know, the guy obviously went too early, and I think that, I think what Gary Speed brings is kind of what you're seeing with the Welsh squad now, and I think that's a huge thing, that, you know, the camaraderie which they've got. You know, Speedo would have been very high on that, but tactically he knew what he was doing. You know, he was, his career speaks for itself. You know, and I think those four players for me, and, you know, you look at the back four, you know, look at Tony Dariga, look at Mel Sterling, each flanks as well, you know, it's, you can't beat that team. It was just the camaraderie which they had, the friendships which they've still got. You know, I don't think you can have that. I don't think you can have that now in football, to be perfectly honest with you. I think that time's gone, and you know, the influence which they had on all of us was huge. And generally we all do still speak, and it's, you know, even me as an apprentice coming into the first team, going into, you know, coming out of retirement quite early, and then obviously, you know, you look at, I still speak to Tony Dariga now, I still speak to Gary Mack now. You know, if you see Strack around, you wouldn't ignore anybody. He'll be there first in with you, taking the mick out of you all the time.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's like. But yeah, you know, they are very influential people and very strong characters, which, you know, at a 16 to 18 year old kid coming through into the first team, it's quite daunting. But once you're in there and you're with them, you know, we're a team and we're all together. And that's one thing which we got drilled into us and drilled into us, not just by the pros, but also by our coaching staff as well. But that midfield, I don't care what everybody says, you know, you've got the Beckham, your Butt, your Scholes, and your got Keane in there instead of maybe Butt, and your Geeks. I still think that forward is better midfield than the Leeds midfield is better than the Man United mid-four midfield. I have to say that. Might be biased, but that's certainly my opinion. That's, you know, it'd be very hard to disagree on that one. But yeah, four great guys, four great players, and, you know, in my lifetime, I don't think I'll see a better four basically playing in midfield.
So how did you find out that you're making your debut?
That was, my first debut, or my actual league debut. It's quite a funny story. My first debut, actually, yeah. I was 17. I played against Grand Passaic, which was Gary Lineker's last game in England. He'd just moved over there. Arsene Wenger was the manager. And basically part of the deal was that they would play a league. Don't ask me why.
You thought it would have been Leicester or Spurs, but it was last game.
Yeah, you would have done. But for some reason, it was Leeds.
Yeah.
And it might have been something to do with the championship, you know, but it was at Leeds, and we had this game. I'd played two games that week already, so I played on the Monday, I think it was, and I played on, like, the Wednesday or the Thursday. I went into work on the Friday, I went into the club, and Paul Hart got me to one side, and Paul just said, look, go have a rest, have the weekend off, go chill out, go do what you want to do, blah, 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 right, fine, no worries. So I just went out, and I rang one of my best mates up, and I said, I've got a free weekend, I need to be in work tomorrow, but do you fancy going out tonight? And he goes, yeah, I'll go out tonight. So we went out, and we had a fair few to think. That's the underlining part of it. And basically, I came in the next morning, just as normal, as a normal time, and one of the lads is walking in, who's in a bit earlier than me, and he was like, are you in the squad today? I'm like, what do you mean I'm in the squad today? Now, Ray Wallace was supposed to be playing right back. Now, Ray never turned up.
Yeah.
So I ended up playing 90 minutes. So my debut basically was when I was hungover. It's the first debut, which I cannot obviously say now. I obviously didn't tell anybody when I was playing, but that was part of it. But yeah, 17-year-old lad who's been out all night on the sauce, and you know, basically had a bit of a hangover the next day.
Yeah.
And then my actual debut, my league debut, was Coventry at home.
Yeah.
We played in the reserves. I was reserve captain. I was playing in reserves against Notts Forest on the Monday. I'd been in a couple of squads. You know, people were thinking that I should be in the squad. So a couple of weeks before, I was in the squad as such of 18, and wasn't involved because at that point we only had two subs. Pretty much all the games. And I think the year after it was we had three subs with a keeper being in there.
Yeah.
And one side and basically said, look, you're on the bench today. It wasn't the gaffer, it was Mick Hennigan who actually said that. Did you on the bench today? I'm like, right, fine. So I knew on Friday that I was going to be on the bench. And obviously the game came about, Coventry at Hull, and Lucas Radebe was playing centre-half, and he did his cruciate ligament in that game. So after about 15-20 minutes, because I was playing centre half in the reserve team. I was actually brought on to play centre half. So we ended up playing centre half. We ended up winning. I think it was 3-0, 3-1. I can't remember the score. That was a bit of a blur. Don't really remember much of the game. To a certain point, I remember obviously coming on. Don't remember the noise, don't remember anything like that. What I do remember is Goran Strachan coming in who basically scored a couple of goals that day. He came in after and he won Man of the Match and gave me the Man of the Match champagne, basically. Oh, so you deserve that today. And that's the kind of guy he was. That's the kind of, you know, because he's building you up. It's, you know, he wants to make you feel good and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's something which you didn't need to do. So that was my debut, and then I played the next two games, which is Notts Forest away, which was my full debut. We ended up losing that. And on my full debut, I got pinned up in the dressing room by John Pemberton. you know, for not doing my job by all accounts. But it was welcome to the real world at that point. And then my next game then was, so that was on the midweek, so that was Tuesday or Wednesday. And then the next game was live on Sky against Man United at Old Trafford. We got a 0-0 draw down there, and you know I was involved with the team then a few games then after that. We were coming to, you know, kind of coming to the end of the season. We're still involved with the squad and everything else and things, and you know it just kind of went from there. You know I was involved then with the first team from that point on. I made me England under 21 debut that summer as well. It was all going very rosy at that point, definitely.
Oh, brilliant. When the Premier League started in 92, did it feel, from a playing perspective, did it feel different or special? Or did you get the impression from the other players? Or?
There was a little bit different. I think the only difference you'd kind of say was that you kind of saw more, there was more games, there was more TV around.
Yeah.
It was a bit more razzmatazz. There was a little bit, you know, there was a few dancers around at certain clubs and certain grounds. But yeah, no, you didn't really feel I'm going to call it a monster that built, really.
Yeah.
Now, because I think that's what it is. I think that, you know, in those days, the Championship and the First Division, Second Division, Third Division was more than working. Did it feel any different in any other way? Not really, I have to say. It started feeling it was different maybe 2 or 3 years down that line.
Yeah.
And things, it was slightly different atmosphere around because there was, again, even more TV then, and there was more interviews to be done, and there was more things, more people coming to training grounds and things like that. But, again, I think it's just a bit of a monster which they've built, and I think that monster's kind of ready to possibly burst at some point. You know, it's very cutthroat, his football, and I think now it's getting to that point, and you know the players are very mollycoddled now. That, you know, we've all seen the European Championships. I think that's kind of proven that.
Yeah.
I think that the players need to, you know, go back to basics. You know, it's like at the very start when I said that, you know, if you go back to when I was a child, it was, you were 14 year old when you became an apprentice or a schoolboy or be involved with a football club. Now you can be involved with that football club at 6, 7, 8 year old, and those kids are with that club all the way through, getting paid a hell of a lot of money and not actually doing anything. You know, and there's a lot of people on a stupid amount of money who aren't actually worth that.
We've got five, seven
clubs going on now, which, you know, these guys, some of them have never played a game in, you know, a first team game, or might play 5 or 6 games in the career,
yeah,
or in that year, and they're on 25-30 grand a week, and it just doesn't feel right now. And I, you know, it took me a long time to get back into football for the right reasons. I kind of fell out of fell out of love with football when I kind of came out for a good 5-6 years, and it's only now that I still watch football, but I get bored of the Premier League. I prefer to watch lower division football, to be perfectly honest. And I just think that the players now are just so removed from reality that it needs to be brought back to reality a little bit more. And I don't know how that would happen, but now it is a monster. Before, certainly when I was there, it was obviously the start of that monster, but you couldn't feel or see that monster was just about to get going. You know, it was you just realised that it was going to be something different.
So you moved to Carlisle United. What prompted the move?
George Graham. Yeah. In one word. Basically, I was up at the end of that year. I'd gone on trial to Rapid Vienna. I'd gone and talked to Osasuna. That was all kind of sorted. Just didn't work out. Last minute hitches, last minute things, which just didn't work for whatever reason. And then Mervyn Day was up at Carlisle. I had a choice of Carlisle or Blackpool. And I had a choice of the two. I went to speak to both. Nigel Worthington was the manager at Blackpool. Mervyn Day was the manager up at Carlisle. I knew both of them, really well. Mervyn basically watched me for a year, and he had a system and an idea of how I was going to play him. Nigel had a different position, which I was going to be playing, which was more right-sided, more right-back, right-side of midfield side of things. Mervyn had more of a holding sitting midfield, which is what I saw myself a bit more as. And, basically George Graham came to me and he said, right, we've accepted a bid from, well, he actually said, we've accepted a bid from Blackpool, go and speak to them. So then I said, well, what about Carlisle? And he says, yeah, we accepted a bid from them a long time ago, but go speak to Blackpool. So basically, he was hedging my bets towards Blackpool, and
yeah.
I suppose that may have influenced a little bit of my decision. But then I went to the two clubs. Carlisle was far better looking as a club from the outside view of the training facilities, the ground, the just being promoted. We had in our team, we had Rory Delap, we had Matt Janssen, we had a guy called Paul Boateng.
Yeah.
We had Owen Archdeacon, we had Warren Aspinall, we had a guy called Stefan Pinovacci. So we had a core team, which actually, when you look at them on paper, were all good players. And a few of them obviously went into play really good level at the Premier League and for a long, long time. And, our kind of aim was to be within that team and really push it on a little bit more and bring, I suppose, a little bit of professionalism from my point, from where I'd been to some of the lads who were up there. So that was really why the move happened, and that's why I went to Carlisle. I'd signed now, the unfortunate thing with Carlisle was, the chairman.
Yeah.
The underlying problem up there. Mervyn got the sack after 6 games. We were just about to get getting our feet. We drew against Blackpool away. And Blackpool, again, was, they got into the playoffs. They lost against Bradford in the playoff the year before. So they were a good team as well, but they were a big, strong kind of team. They were totally different. And we played really well, and we were starting just to get a little bit of momentum going. And I got a text from Merv when I was in the car, and when I was on the bus, and he was just like, look, I've been sacked. He sacked me from the front of the bus. And, that was kind of my... in the long term, that was my demise, really. The chairman didn't like me. I didn't like the chairman. The new manager came in, which wasn't a manager. There were the two youth team guys, which are still there now, I think, which is Dave Alpin and Dave Wilson, John Alpin. And literally, the chairman was the one who was picking the team. He had a massive influence on those two. They were just puppets on a string. He did have a massive influence on that side of it. And, I played 24 games and that year, and ironically. Now, I believe once I'd left and spoke to the agents who'd done the deal, I believe that if I played 25 games, then there was another figure needed to be spent from Carlisle. So,
all right. So it's politics.
Politics in football. Hmm. Who says there is any? So yeah, me and the chairman didn't get on. We had fight after fight. After the first year, Nigel Pearson came in. Then we had Nigel for a bit. He picked me. I was playing. He had his own mind, everything else, and he got the sack. And lo and behold, the same two guys come back in, and it was just a club which was in a horrible position, really, and you know the training was terrible. Everything about it really just wasn't run right. Which me coming from where I'd come from and saying what I suppose I was passionate and things, I'd make my voice clear, and you know I had quite a lot of talks with the with the chairman at different times. Some okay, some shouting sessions. and that's the thing which kind of happens, unfortunately. Yeah, well, basically, I've gone from, if you go from Carlisle, like I came out of Carlisle, went to Blackpool for 2 years. We basically had, Nigel went and brought me in. Had 18 months down at Blackpool. Got injured a lot the second year. And literally I couldn't get a club at the end of the year. And then I went into personal training. So I've been a personal trainer now for 15 years, coming up. So that's what I came into, stay out of football pretty much. And then we've just literally taken on a new business, which is called Revive. And what Revive does is, it's an IV hydration and wellness clinic. We're a worldwide brand, so we've got places in Las Vegas, Miami, New York. We've got South Africa in Johannesburg. We've got all over Europe as well. We've got then in the UK, we've got Knightsbridge, Knutsford, and ourselves in Guiseley. Me and my wife and Juliet, my wife's cousin, has just opened up in Hong Kong as well, so we've just put a flagship in Hong Kong. So we're involved with that, and basically, we can help to take away allergies, we can help to take away any kind of nauseas and things like that which you might have. If you're down with energy, then we need to build that energy back up again. We can give you the energy.
Something you might have needed on your daily.
Literally anything you want, we can, in a way, we have an infusion which will go for that. Now, our infusions are all administered by NHS nurses, which we work with, which we employ and things into the clinics. It's all directly into the bloodstream. As well, so it all goes directly into the cannula, through the cannula into the arm, and off you go. We did, I think it was over 50,000 IVs last year. I think that was European based. We did. So, the company itself is building and building and building. We're one of the master franchises as well of that. So we have a gym underneath, which I'm still doing the personal training side, and then we've got the clinic, which is upstairs. So it all works quite well together in that sense. So it's just trying to, we're trying to build it. We're trying to build it, obviously, in the Leeds area. We've got a client base now, which keeps coming back. We're always looking for new clients, for that. If somebody's going on a holiday, we can get rid of the jet lag. If you go on a holiday just to a sunny place, then we can increase your hydration side, which generally in this country, 80% of people are dehydrated, so we can bring the hydration back in.
So the website is revive.me.com, and it's at Revive Leeds.
Revive.me.com is the website, and it's Revive without an E. If you go on to Twitter, it's Revive UK. For us itself, you can find us at Revive Leeds. There's quite a lot of stuff on there. We're on Facebook as well, which is exactly the same. They're all on there, and you can see a whole load of information on there. See all our celebs, which we have in this country, which we've had. We've had Nathalie Imbruglia in. We've had Cara Delevingne's been down in London. We've just done Millie McIntosh a couple of times as well before Glastonbury and after Glastonbury, just to get everything back into it, because obviously there's Glastonbury's a bit of a mad one, I think. Four days of not sleeping and lots of drinking.
I've been to lots of festivals, I know.
to replenish all that. But yeah, you can find us on all these on all the social media sites and stuff. If anybody has any questions or anything, don't be afraid to ask, really. You can come on and ask us a question.
Yeah, I'll put all the links in the description below this interview. And before we go, we've got Anthony, who hosts our Football League show, has sent in a few questions, if you're okay for another 5 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. He said, what do you think what do you think of Gary Bowyer taking over at Blackpool?
I think he's not a bad move. I think the biggest problem at Blackpool is the Oyston family, personally. Yeah. I was there when Carl was the chairman as well. So he's been there a long time. The problem is, you know, Carl has got a great fan base, fantastic fan base. You know, very loyal fans which want the best for the club, which every fan wants around the world. And the problem is, you know, they got into the Premier League and it was like, right, we'll take all our money back out and we'll just strip everything down. I think he's on a hiding to nothing.
Yeah.
Down there, he can't really lose if he gets them promoted, which he needs to get them promoted and out of that league ASAP, because they could go all the way down like they did in the early 2000s. Mm. You know, it's a hard league to come back out of. So I think it's a good appointment. They've bought a few new players in as well, which are decent. I still keep an eye on them. Down there, and I think that you know, hopefully he'll do a decent job. You know, I think it's the problem you've got is every manager needs a bit of time, and is he going to be given that time? I think he's only got a year's contract.
Yeah,
it's a year rolling contract as such. But you know, from the past, it's you know, every manager who's been involved with Blackpool hasn't had any money to spend. You know, they were in the Premier League 4 years ago. You know, and it's that money which you're getting from your balloon payments that just kind of, it's just all come back out and gone into the Oyston family. And
yeah.
I think that's where a lot of the fans are disgruntled. But there's nothing you can do when a chairman's like that. That's the problem. You know, the owner of the football club, until somebody comes in and wants to buy it, you know, it's not going to get any better. And, you know, I hope that Bowyer can come in and he can do a good job for, you know, to bring them back into the, you know, not the glory days, but, you know, bring them back to be a good championship football team, which
yeah.
is only 2-3 years ago when they were in there. And that's all the fans want. The fans don't want a team which is in the Premier League every year. They just want a team which is in the championship, which is fighting.
Just want a team that can compete, certainly.
You know, that's all the fans want, really. But yeah, hopefully he'll do a good job.
So also, Gary Monk has replaced Steve Evans at Leeds. Where do you think they'll finish next season?
I do a bit of work down at Leeds. I still follow Leeds quite a lot.
Yeah.
And I have to say that I think it's a great signing for us. Again, we've got a nutting of a chairman. You know, and that's the big problem. I think Gary Monk is going to be given time. I think he's going to be given, he's certainly been given a bit of money, which, you know, we've got a few players which have come in. And we talk about a few more coming in with, you know, for a few quid as well.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's money to be done. You know, last year wasn't good enough. You know, Steve Evans, I watched a lot of games last year, and Steve Evans talked the talk. He talked the right things to the fans. He talked the right things to the press and the media. But I'm glad he's gone.
Yeah.
Very much am I glad he's gone. Tactically, wasn't good enough. Behind the scenes, a lot going on. I think he lost a few of the players quite early on. I think he lost a few fans later on, with some decisions which he was making. But he still talked the talk, and I think a lot of fans would have been quite happy to have Steve Evans being there.
There's plenty of good young players.
I'm glad he's gone. I think the young players really went backwards last year. You know, we've got three really good young players, you know, four or five if you add everybody into it. But we've got Charlie Taylor left back, who for me can go into any Premier League team now and play.
He's been linked to United a lot, hasn't he?
Well, there's a lot of talk of him going. You know, to I think Mark Hughes is desperate for him.
Yeah.
You know, there's even Liverpool talking about him as well. I think that's maybe for their quarter of the English players and stuff more than anything else. But I think that, you know, I think for me, you know, Charlie's a top class player. He does it all himself down at left hand side. Cook, same thing. Top class player. He's only 18, 19, he's Cook. He just needs a bit of guidance. And the thing which he was never going to get with Steve Evans was guidance.
No.
The young players last year actually for me, went backwards. I think this year with Gary Monk, the whole philosophy of Gary Monk when he was at Swansea was to get the players he had and make them better. And personally, at that time, I think he did. You know, they had a great run. He wasn't unlucky being sacked. He was cutthroat in the Premier League. Mm. You know, he lost a lot of games on the trot, so I think it was always going to happen. But I think he's got his hunger back. Again, you know, he's talking the right words. You know, about Leeds. He knows the philosophy, and I think he'll bring the young players through. And I think we could be a force this year. It's going to be it's a very, very tough league this year. But potentially, you know, we could have a little bit of a goal this year if we just get our defence right. We need another centre half. And if we get a striker who gives us 20 goals next year, then we won't be far off next year.
No. Before we go, do you want to plug your social media?
Well, my social media is AndyCuz23.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to follow us, then that's completely fine. We generally talk about football. Sometimes it's other bits, but yeah, you know, if people want to follow, then you know, grab onto there and follow us. No problems whatsoever. You know, Facebook wise, again, you know, we've got the personal training business, which is on there. We can see personal training. We've got the Revive stuff, which is on there as well. So we've got the Revive Leeds Facebook page, and we also have the Revive Leeds Twitter page as well, which is just simple Revive Leeds on both of those. So if anybody wants to follow, then absolutely go ahead.
Yeah, and you can find all the links will be in the description below this interview. So I've really enjoyed speaking to you today. I'd love to have you on again in the future, maybe on a Football League show.
Perfect.